Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where it's all about making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way.
Yes, sir. And if you're new to the show or been around for a while and haven't done so, be sure to join our free email community where you receive our free 15-minute money plan, interesting personal finance and career reads, and much more. That's available at paybal.co/email. Again, that's paybal.co/email.
And on today's show, we're chatting with Stephen Hughes of No Money Inc. about how to get financially organized, his path into entrepreneurship, and more. And we also had a good conversation on the first edition of the After Show, where we talked about the differences between what men and women look for in the personal finance space. To get access to this and future editions of the After Show, visit paybal.co/Patreon. Again, that's paybal.co/Patreon, spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Here's our conversation with Stephen, and we hope you enjoy. So welcome to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, Stephen.
Yeah, thanks for having me, fellas.
And also, since we are of the same fraternity, I have to say, Bark Noise, my brother.
Rude to the Briz.
So tell the good people of the PNB fam a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah, so I'm in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm a money expert, financial educator, and entrepreneur here in South Carolina. And, you know, I started my financial education organization, No Money, in 2014 after... Really, I ruined it all when it came to my finances in college. And I think a lot of people who look like us, you know, we have experiences that shape how we manage money going down the road. And my problem was that I didn't have enough experiences that were positive to say, okay, when I got to college, this is how I should do things. And so I made every financial mistake possible. I had 7 maxed out credit cards. I had overdraft fees to the point they closed my accounts. And said, hey, we don't want you to bank here anymore. Can you ease on down the road? And wow. I had 2 repossessions because 1 wasn't enough, of course. I got evicted from my apartment. My credit score was like a 385. So yeah, I did it all outside of bankruptcy. And kind of got to the point where I figured I probably should do something different. When I started learning more about money, kind of how to keep it, you know, I started helping people who were either making the same mistakes that I was or who wanted to avoid those mistakes at all costs.
So what was your experience with money growing up?
Well, you know, both of my parents are from Jamaica. We, you know, had humble beginnings. It was like 8 of us in a 3-bedroom house. And sometimes there were family members who would come over here from Jamaica. And so, you know, we'd all be living in the house, but we didn't have a lot of money. You know, it wasn't a secret. Of course, we had mad hand-me-downs because I'm 1 of 5. I'm smack dab in the middle. Because we didn't really manage or we didn't talk about money specifically, like having centered conversations about money, how it was flowing, you know, why the lights were cut off or why the water was cut off every now and then. I didn't know what to do in those cases when it came to managing money. And so without having those conversations, you'd kind of fill in the blanks with whatever everybody else was doing. And everybody else was kind of getting into debt or spending money or, you know, just doing the things that regular college students do. So, without having those conversations at the beginning, you know, that kind of spiraled down the road.
So let me ask, was that a personal decision? You said you did everything except for file for bankruptcy. Did you speak to someone professionally or did you just decide, like, I'm going to dig my way out of this?
It was more so deciding that I was going to dig my way out of it. I read a book called The Richest Man in Babylon. And, you know, I tell people all the time that I think life's about stories and impacts. And so I had tried to kind of learn about money like early in my college career, but I went to a financial education workshop and it was just a bunch of old white men talking about HELOC mortgages. And at the time I didn't even know what a regular mortgage was. And so none of that stuff related to me. And so when I started reading that book, it was almost like I could picture everything that was happening in the book, especially because I listened to a lot of hip hop music. So, you know, storytellers are my thing. So that's how I kind of started getting on the right track. And then it was also all the negative things that were happening that I was tired of happening. Like, I didn't want to be in a position where I could get evicted again or have to see my car getting dragged up the street.
Mm. And so you got to college and then I imagine at some point you were like, oh, nice, credit cards, frisbees. So What was that experience for you? I guess, what were your thoughts back then? I know you mentioned that you didn't have a lot of conversations about money growing up, but like, what was the actual experience of getting into all of that debt and then having to dig yourself out?
Yeah, I think that you remember like the Welcome Back Festival that happens at the beginning of the semester?
Nah, bro, I'm washed and old.
So you, like there were at Clemson, there'd be like a bunch of events going on in the week of people getting back to campus. So there'd be, you know, restaurants and bars that had specials downtown. There'd be vendors just all across the streets, all across the library bridge.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah. And so throughout that process, this was before the government tried to step in and say, hey, maybe that's predatory lending. So, you know, in 2005, when I was on a college campus, all of the Welcome Back Festivals or all of the events, it seemed like there was a credit card company at every single one of these events. And they always had something that I wanted, whether it was like a free T-shirt or a coupon for a whole free pizza or a free sub. Like, you know, I'm a foodie. So I was like, oh, okay, I get free food. Okay, that's what's up. I just filled out the applications and the cards kept coming. And I was like, oh, okay. At first, I was responsible. Like, I got a card from Discover and it was $1,000 limit. So I said, okay, well, I can just use this for emergencies because I know I'll never save $1,000. Like, that was my mindset at the time. The rest of them that came in, I was like, oh, well, I'll just use this for when we go out on the weekend. So I grab a bottle every weekend with this card. And then this card I'll use when I need some clothes. Like, I started kind of portioning them out that way. They just kept coming. So, and I kept signing up. I realized that really quickly that I needed to make payments and pay the money back. And that's the part that sucked.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. It's funny because most people don't start with Discover, man. Usually it's a Visa or a MasterCard. So they got you good there.
Yeah, it was the first one that got to the house. So when it got to the house, I was like, okay, cool. Discover, I can't use it everywhere. Like, all right, where can I use it? And so that was my first experience with a credit card.
Got you. I know part of what you do now is go speak on site at college campuses. So what are you telling kids these days when it comes to all of these vendors at these various festivals and events with these credit cards and T-shirts? What are you telling the young people out there?
Well, you know, no money. We focus on college students. And so helping college students kind of think and talk about money differently so they can manage it better. And so I just tell college students straight up, hey, you're going to get hit up about a credit card while you're here. It's probably going to happen your freshman year. Like we talk to a lot of university 101 classes and we do a good bit of workshops for incoming freshmen or like rising seniors. And so I tell them I think the problem for me was that I didn't know much about credit cards. And the only thing that I heard when I was younger was that stay away from them. Don't use them. But I feel like we experienced everything our parents told us not to do. So, you know, getting the credit card and saying, oh, well, I'm going to go ahead and use it. Not knowing how to use it is where I got into trouble. So I tell students now, hey, you're going to get a credit card. This is the expectation of the credit card. It's really a plastic loan in your pocket. And by the way, you're probably going to have 20 to 25% that they're going to charge you on the credit card. So every time you borrow $100, you're going to have to pay $20 to $25 back. And when you put those terms in front of students, they're like, dang. $20 to $25 if I borrow $100. So they can relate the numbers, like the dollars, instead of trying to read a credit card application or contract. So it's easy for them to decipher if they're going to get a credit card or not, or can they manage it or handle it while they're, you know, a freshman not bringing in much money, or a sophomore rising, a junior or senior, where they do have a little bit coming in and they can kind of work with it.
So I think I have a two-part question here. In relation to that conversation, like, are college students making any new mistakes? Is there like some, you know, like Rich, I'm old and washed too, so I really have no idea what college students are doing. Someone asked me the other day, I was like, man, I ain't been in college in like 15 years. And so I really have no idea what they're doing.
I was graduating in 2005.
Yeah, I don't know when school's in or out. It's just more traffic on the road. I'm like, what's different today? And anyway, so I guess my question is, are college students doing anything new under the sun that I need to know about? And then I also remember when I was a college student, for the college student listeners, I thought like soon as I graduated, that's when I'd make six figures. So can you talk about also income changes and like what to expect post-college?
Yeah, sure. So in regards to new mistakes that college students are making, I can't say there's anything new. I think everything is foundationally done when it comes to either spending recklessly or not knowing how to save or invest. Outside of mistakes, one thing I will say is that I see a lot more college students who are focused on their hustle. Like they're trying to figure out what could be a good side hustle while they're in college so they can make some money instead of, you know, picking up a part-time job or something. And so instead of a mistake, I'd say that's something that I like to see in college students that I'm seeing more of. And your second question was about...
What can they expect like when they graduate? So I made $19,000 after college, just to give people some numbers. I thought it'd be six figures. It was $19,000.
So okay. I made 23. So I feel you.
Exactly. So I just kind of want people to have that context, because when I was in my head, when I got my credit card, I got three in college as well. It's just like, it doesn't matter because I'm going to make so much money as soon as I graduate. Like this credit card ain't nothing to me. You know, so it's easy money.
Exactly.
And so, I also wanted you to kind of speak to that a little bit about that reality.
Yeah, well, when I was in school, like I just knew I was gonna be guapped up when I graduated. But the issue was that I dropped out of school before graduating. I was in school in 2005, and then in 2010 there was one class that I needed to graduate, but I had already got five job offers. So I said, screw it, I'm not gonna wait. Like I'm not going back to school in the fall for this one class when I know this money is available right now. And so I took this sales job. They told me that they didn't care, that I didn't graduate as long as I was going back sometime. I told them, yeah, of course I would. But it's hard once you drop out of school to go back when that money's coming in until you realize that it ain't a lot of money. And so to your point, like when you graduate, you know, depending on what your profession is, because, you know, my best friend, he was studying engineering. So when he jumped out of school, I'm sure he was making 50 to 70 G's when he started. But as someone in sales who has to build a book of business, or even if you're working an office job, you're making $30,000, maybe $40,000. And that six-figure dream is a little ways away, depending on what your specialty is. But I think that a lot of us came out with that expectation, like, oh, I'm going to make six figures easy, 3 years out of school. And 3 years out of school, when you are making 30 compared to the 23 you were making 3 years ago, you're like, dang, bro, what happened? And I think that's something that, I'm talking to more college students about now, because they want to know before they leave, like, hey, how much can I expect to make? Or what does income look like on a monthly basis? Hmm. You know, everybody wants to know, how much am I bringing home every month? Or how much can I spend? Because they're trying to figure out apartments and cars and different things like that. But that bread is not coming for a few years unless you get, you know, really niche down, or you have some experience that you're building business while you're in school.
And so it sounds like your first job out of school was in sales, right?
Yep.
And so did you stay in sales? Did you move on to a different field? And then when did you start realizing, all right, it's time for me to get going with my own thing?
So when I was in school, I was studying human resource management.
Nice. I respect it.
I really knew I was going to be in HR because I love talking to people. I love meeting new people. I love helping businesses solve problems. So I said, okay, HR is the thing for me. And even in school, I was really focused on the psychology of things. So I took a lot of industrial and organizational psychology classes. And those were the highest grades that I had, like, while I was in college. But I thought that I was going to get an HR job. And I went on my first HR interview, like, while I was in my senior year. And I'll never forget the lady who interviewed me. She said, baby, I ain't retiring for another 15 years. You think you're going to get my job?
Ooh.
And I was like, nope, no, ma'am, I don't. At this point, like, now I figure it out. Because it was something that I consistently heard in the HR profession. It was like, people who get in HR, they don't leave. Like, this is the industry that you want to be in. And so it was a little challenging at first to try to find an entry-level HR job when I was coming out of school. But a ton of people wanted me for sales because they had seen my sales background. Like, I had two sales internships while I was in school. And then, like, you know, like some people, you know, you start selling candy when you're in grade school. But me and my best friend and another friend of mine, we had like a legit candy business in middle school. Like, we had a separate book bag. We had a price list. We had employees and stuff like that. It was going. And so sales had always been in me. And when I started in sales, when I kind of dropped out of school in 2010, I knew that it was something that I liked because I could generate my funds. Like my income was based off of my own experience and the things that I delivered when it came to results. But a little bit of me wanted to have an office job so I could feel like maybe I want to do the thing that I was studying in college. And so I left the sales job and got a job in the office with Blue Cross Blue Shield. And I was managing a couple of people for a little bit, but it was almost itching me to be in four walls every single day, like having to sit at a desk every single day. And so that's when I kind of really focused on building No Money and like being able to get out of that office. You know, that's when my gear switched.
Yeah, man, that's a very similar path, man. Because when I got out, I worked in sales as well. And then it took me a few years before I could get into more of an HR job. So it was still sales. Ended up working at a staffing agency for a couple of years to help get some of that recruiting experience. And then I've been in HR ever since. And I was also an industrial and labor relations major. So aside from that thing about enjoying talking to people, I think we're similar in a lot of ways, bro.
Dang. Well, at least you know, like you're self-aware that you do not enjoy that. And at the same time, you're talking to people like all the time. Y'all are talking to people all the time now. So that's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. And so what do you say to people about the sales field? Because a lot of people have reservations about it because of the commission structure. And I remember when I went into headhunting, it was in 2008, right when the economy tanked. And so I went in thinking, you know, I'm a boss up. I hear about headhunters making $100,000 a year, $150K. Right. And that was not my reality at all. There were way more people looking for jobs than there were jobs available. And people have similar concerns about more standard sales types of jobs where, you know, you're on the road. I remember for myself, I was selling first aid kits and I was out there looking like Will Smith in Pursuit of Happiness in a suit with a big first aid kit in my hand. And so when people ask me about sales, I recognize that there are a lot of transferable skills within that job that can take you into other roles. But then also for me individually, I recognize that, hey, this isn't what I can do long term. This process of dialing for dollars, doing these however many sales pitches per week, even though I have freedom, is burning me out to be having these conversations where I'm trying to get someone to like me and someone to like the product or service that I'm repping for. So what do you tell people who are curious about sales jobs?
I love sales. I still have a sales job now. I think that because people see me do so much for No Money and on my keynote speeches, they don't know that I work full time. And yeah, I still work full time because I like the money. I think that sales is the most transferable skill when it comes to wanting to become an entrepreneur. And because it teaches you so much about yourself on the things that you can do well or the things that you need help with. And it also teaches you how to learn about people if you're doing it right. I was talking to somebody the other day about sales and how when people hear sales, they're thinking of like the aggressive, pushy bargain, you know, used car salesman or the door-to-door salesperson or the network marketing person who asking you if you're ready for an opportunity. And that's not what sales is if you're doing it right. Because I've seen network marketing people who kill it in sales and they're making real money. So that's not a knock towards network marketing. But in regards to sales, if you learn the relationship of people and the psychology of how people make these decisions in sales, then it's going to be an easier road for you because I'm selling something that I never thought I'd never cared about. And as I learned more about it and realized how it solves problems for businesses, then I was like, okay, I can get into this hardware and software sales when it comes to document management. But before, it's never something that I'd ever think about as far as industry. But as I said before, like the compensation, you really can't beat it because you're writing your own check. And you're learning these skills that are going to be transferable if you're going to start your own business. So anybody who's interested in sales, I tell them to go for it. Or I even push people who are trying to figure out, you know, what they like and what they want to do to try sales because you never know. It's just like food service. I think everybody should try it. Like everybody should have a job at either a restaurant or a fast food place just so you can understand like people. Like the relationship, the customer service side of things, that makes a huge difference. And it is the labor that goes into producing these $3 to $10 meals. Like you know, nobody's thinking about that, but it's grit, being a busboy or a waitress or in the back of the house. I think sales kind of gives you that same mentality, the skills you would be able to transfer to any single profession.
I mean, I almost had to slow clap as a former waiter there, so I had to hold myself back, because I really do think that gives me and anyone that's been in service industry a different perspective from the other side, from people who have never been there, then typically treat those people like the S word, since we're a family friendly show. You said something there go ahead.
I'm glad you said that you're family friendly. Like, that's a good thing to be noted of going forward.
Well, I actually want to call out something you said there is, I wrote this down, you know, I got the quotes over here, so this is going in the show notes. I work full time because I like the money. And I think, I don't know if this is something that college students still struggle with today. It sounds like, and it's a good thing that that's a hustle that they had gotten over. But for the longest time, I was actually, which was weird, I had this strange dichotomy where it was, I was ashamed to go after money. And I wish I had a better understanding to correlate my major to money. I majored in business, but it was completely coincidental. And I kind of think, and I'm wondering if you're seeing this or talking to students about this, that is the new reality. I thought in my head that I'd go to school. For some reason, I thought I'd get one job, I'd work it for 40 years, and then I'd retire, apparently rich and wealthy.
And hey.
wait. I literally mean the noun rich, not you rich. Oh, which actually, the fact that you jumped in is very telling, though.
one percenter.
And so I'm kind of wondering, is that's also the advice that you give? Because that's kind of the switch, both mentally and when I talk to younger individuals, 20 or younger, just really trying to figure life out, is either have the expectation or at least the knowledge to know that, yeah, you might have to work more than one job. I'm not saying work. I'm not that 60, 80 hours a week. I'm just saying that the new reality might be the quote unquote gig economy, where you have these multiple slash roles in which, all encompassing, you make whatever this total income will be. Is that something you agree with or disagree with, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that it's necessary for every single person to have another stream of income. And whether that is that other stream of income, if your main stream of income is your full-time job, by all means, you know, build something on the side that's going to, you know, supplement, God forbid, if you lose your job. And I know people say that, you know, it's something that people say in passing almost now, because so many people have side hustles, but there's still a lot of people who are still trying to figure out, well, how would I or how could I even make money outside of the full-time job that I'm getting this paycheck from? That's something I definitely talk to people about, that because even though I work a full-time job, as I said, a lot of people just don't know because it's not something that I publicize. Like my full-time job is my full-time job, and my social media like platform and profiles are really for No Money and how I'm growing as a speaker. But I've been out of work before. Like I quit my job in 2015 to start a real estate investing company that we ended up closing like 9 months later. And then I had to just hustle for the next 9 or 10 months until I got a full-time job that kind of gave me the income that I needed to build No Money the way it needed to be built, where I wasn't stressing it out, trying to just get money from people. I could really build a system, some programs that spoke to people and people actually needed, instead of stressing about the income of where is the money going to come from to do the program and to pay me so I can pay my bills. And so that's really why I focused on getting another job, so that I could really build the business how it needed to be built. And I think that a lot of people don't, you know, entrepreneurship is, it's glamorous. You know, people jumping off cliffs and building planes on the way down, as they say, but you need that income. And the financial resources is a part of building a company. Human resources is another, and you definitely need people who know what they're doing, but the money is important.
Hey folks, we hope you're enjoying our conversation with Steven. We're taking a quick break to tell you about today's sponsor, JobScan. JobScan helps you optimize your resume and eliminate some of the most annoying tasks that come with applying for jobs. You can see which hard skills, soft skills, and buzzwords occur most often and match between your resume and the job description. This helps ensure you're hitting all the key points. And like I mentioned last week when I ran my own resume through the service, it works. You can also easily track all the various versions of your resume in one place and set up a master version that will always serve as the starting point. If you're like me, this means no more searching Google Docs, My Documents, or email and trying to figure out what's what. JobScan Premium gives job seekers unlimited resume scans and access to exclusive tools to help you in these professional streets. Go to jobscan.co and use promo code PAYCHECKS to get 10% off JobScan Premium. That's JobScan, JobScan.co, promo code PAYCHECKS for 10% off JobScan Premium. And now, back to the show.
Another thing I just realized that might sound extremely intimidating. So for the listeners that are still here that had been frightened off, you know, it's 2019, you know, got to start off on a dark note like we always do, I was I'm starting the blog up again. And, you know, like any exercise is making me, you know, have a different perspective. It's like you said, you're reading The Richest Man in Babylon. I read The Millionaire Next Door. I read both The Automatic Millionaire and The Millionaire Next Door. But I read it at 20, mm-hmm. and I had a completely different takeaway at 30. And I say that because as I'm writing the blog now, I realized, and this didn't even really occur to me, but it was cool that, you know, so I wrote this book, The Debt Free or Die Trying, you know, published that in my early 30s. And I just get these residual checks. So it's cool that you can do this thing now 6 years ago. And I really don't even think about it. It just comes in because it's automated. And I'm like, you know, that's what I'm kind of talking about. These activities that folks can do in their 20s might not have immediate payout, setting up, like you said, those multiple income streams or building your client base. But when you're looking back 5-10 years later, you literally are reaping what you sowed. And that's kind of another framework that people can think about. Like, okay, you might not know that thing that's going to make you rich today, but what's that thing you could do today that would lead to those multiple income streams or residual payoffs or some upfront work that then you're done doing it? So now all I got to do is send a link out like, hey, go buy this book that I wrote 6 years ago.
Right, right. I hate that sounded doom and gloom. I actually want to like inspire and motivate people to get more side hustles because as you said, like you wrote that book 6 years ago and the checks come in, you know, monthly that you're not even thinking about. And there are going to be things like I talked to a friend of mine when I was in New York earlier last month about he's an author and he also helps people write books. So at this point, he's written, I think, 40 books with whether it's by himself or with other people. And he was telling me, like, well, once you control the distribution of your book, because I was asking him, well, why don't you go and get a publisher? And he was saying, well, when you control the distribution of your book, then you can control how much you make on a monthly basis. And you can kind of put it on the different platforms like Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever and control how the book is being distributed, but also in regards to how you package the book when you're speaking. And so there are different products and services that people can create or, you know, start doing while they're working full time. So there's a lot of money out here. I think there's a lot of opportunity out here because the gig economy is popping. Like now that things are really going and people are seeing that side hustling is here to stay, you know, it's giving more people a chance to jump in and try to figure out, well, oh, how could I make some money?
And I just want to say quickly, you were motivating. I think my question was was dark. I was like, yeah, man, these people got to work 6 jobs, you know. I was like, wait a minute, that might come off wrong. So,
Well, I mean, as a Jamaican descendant, like, you know, working all these jobs, we just got to do it. You know, let's do it. So, I feel you.
I like that, man. And so, one thing that people may be wondering is that you are still working a full time job. It sounds like. And mm-hmm. you're also building no money on the side. And on top of that, a big part of your second hustle is you're doing public speaking, which is time intensive. You're traveling, you're burning vacation days, you're spending however many hours getting the session or getting the talks together for wherever you're speaking. How are you managing to find the time to be able to do that?
So that's a good question. And I didn't realize how many things, you know, I kind of had in the fires and the iron until someone asked me a similar question last month because we were talking about school, right? And some people, but like the young lady, she's getting her PhD and I just started a program at Creighton University to study financial psychology and behavioral finance. And so someone was like, you added more to your plate? Like what you doing? But in regards to the time, I think that the thing that's helped me the most is taking a step back and building like a couple of processes and systems, and also getting people to work with me on the projects that I'm doing. So in regards to No Money, like one of our biggest programs, even though our target market may not be the homeless community, there was a special project that came kind of to my attention and gave me an opportunity to help, where there's a homeless shelter in Columbia, South Carolina that wanted to teach their clients about financial education. And so we partnered, we put a program together, and every single Thursday at 3 p.m., there's a financial education workshop going on at the homeless community. And somebody would ask, well, how do you have time to do that workshop every single Thursday for an hour, plus get prepared for it, plus leave and kind of do the rest of your work? But oftentimes I don't do the workshops. I have facilitators that do them. And I had to create a process and a system that, one, sent the communication out to the homeless community and the facilitator to let everybody know kind of, hey, this is what you're going to be doing today. This is what the topic is. Here's your handouts. Here's your presentation. If you guys have any questions, feel free to email me. But I set that up. It was a scheduled email every single week because I knew what was going to be taught every week. It was a 4-week program. So things like that kind of helped me manage my time because I know that processes and systems are so important now because there are so many things on my plate. And I think that, you know, people talk about time management or work-life balance, but it's really just focusing on the priority at hand. And I know that the priority right now is to get more systems in place and add a couple of people to the team so that I don't get burnt out or I don't get stressed while I'm kind of building these different things out.
That's what's up, man. This is probably a good time to transition to getting financially organized, especially because you mentioned the importance of having systems. So we're at that time of the year, resolutions. This is the year I finally make it happen. Vision boards, all of these various things. But whether someone has had a little bit of experience managing their money before, or they're just deciding to get their stuff together for the first time, that overall process can be pretty overwhelming. So what do you say to someone who says, all right, I got my various bank accounts, or maybe I just have one account, but I've decided that it's finally time for me to get my financial life together. Where do I start?
I think that the perfect place to start is kind of, I know that since we're at the top of the year, as you mentioned, people make resolutions, people are setting goals. And when it came to getting my money together, like the thing that helped me turn the corner the most was setting goals. Like figuring out what exactly I wanted to do, like what was the bullseye on the target that if I accomplished this, like I was going to be happy and I knew that I was moving in the right direction. And so anybody who's, whether you have one account or 10 accounts, if you're trying to get your financial life together in 2019, you got to set your financial goals. That's really where it starts. And not just SMART goals, but my accountability partner, a friend of mine, Tanya Rapley, I know you guys had her on the show before as well. But she, in her book, The Money Manual, she talked about adding the why to your SMART goals, because just because your goals are SMART, specific, they're measurable, they're actionable, they're relevant, they're time specific, it may not resonate with you unless you know why you're doing it. And so if you're trying to get your finances together right now, the best thing you can do is set financial goals, and in those financial goals you set, figure out, well, why is that goal your goal? Like, it ain't your mama goal, it ain't your daddy goal, it ain't your brother, sister, cousin goal. It's your financial goal. Like, you have to worry about your money right here. Why are you setting this goal? And once you can answer those questions, like really deeply answer those questions, then you're on your way. And the management of the money, when it comes to organizing it, we can get into that a bit, but I think that that's the perfect place to start. Like figuring out 1 to 3 goals that you know you want to accomplish in the next 3 to 12 months.
So I really love that you mentioned the importance of having a why. And that's something that I've talked about before. And I think I might have even called it emotionally driven goals, where you're not just doing it for the sake of doing it. It's something where when you see it and you envision realizing that goal, you actually feel something. And
exactly. So
for some people, that might be the freedom of leaving your job. For some people, that might be going on a vacation or going somewhere that you've been thinking about for a long time. It's going to look different to everyone. But for someone who's never thought about goal setting And for someone who hasn't really even thought about their why, there could still be a little bit of overwhelm. Like, how do I even go about the process of figuring out what's important to me?
Well, in regards to figuring out what's important to you, I know that the first place you can start, and it depends on like how you're motivated, whether it's kind of building up the positive things on what could happen once you accomplish this goal, or some people like they need they use like negative energy to fuel them. Like they need some haters on their back. They want to know what they don't want to happen. And either way, like I think that'll get you in the mindset of what you want to accomplish. Like just knowing, well, who would benefit if you do get your financial life together? So making a list of 10 to say, you know, who, whether it's your girlfriend or boyfriend or spouse or mother or father, because you kind of have to help them with their finances too in our kind of generation, or maybe your best friend will finally start their business. Like making a list of the people who will directly and indirectly be affected once you get your finances together kind of helps you scope out, well, okay, now that I know who will be affected and why I even want to do this, I can get an idea of what I want to accomplish.
Yeah. And I also want to say for people, like Rich said, and I think he actually said this on a previous show as well, is for people who are just getting started, because I think a lot of people, especially when they're this is their first time getting organized, whether it's financially or otherwise, they'll get so caught up and overwhelm themselves in just the idea of doing it that they never get started.
Right.
And I was advising somebody a few months ago now, and we were having this back and forth conversation, and I realized that he was just coming up with all these reasons not to start. And really what I told him is, okay, let's do one thing a week. So complete the sentence, I will blank this week. And what he was like, that's, you know, that's so simple, that's not going to make a difference. I'm like, if you did that once a week, you'd be 52 steps, just by simple math, further than the person who did zero things a week. And I think,
exactly.
And what Rich said, and I agree with, is people don't realize or gravely overestimate how easy it is to be above average.
Man.
Because the average person is going to chill.
Yeah.
52 weeks is going to pass. They're going to make a New Year's resolution. They're going to fall off by February. 52 more weeks are going to pass. And then you multiply that times somewhere between 70 and 100.
Y'all talk about like, being dark, man. That's dark right there.
He took it there. He took it there, though.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't have to do, like, and I do feel like this. That's where our generation, we get really caught up in it has to be technical. And it has to be complicated. And like, which app do I need to download and ignore? Like, not really. Like, just do one thing.
One thing.
Then
yeah.
Two things. And then three things. And it's just amazing how those things pay off over time, because then you're benefiting from all those 52 things you did. And then 104. And then I can't do the math from there, but you get what I'm saying. Have you found a way for people to just break out of themselves?
Yeah, I think that because I live my life by three words. So it's funny that you were saying, like, really just doing that one thing a week or for 52 weeks or however long. I live my life by action cures all. And I knew that when I was making all those mistakes, if I could just do one thing in that specific week to get me going, then I'd be better off next week. And then next week, I'd figure out where I need to go from there. So if people are trying to figure out, okay, well, where do they need to start? I think that, you know, a lot of people start with budgeting, and a lot of people hate that word. It's tied to negative things anyway. But once you are deciding, all right, I'm going to get my money together, what does getting my money together look like? And you're, you know, setting your goals. The next thing is to try to figure out, well, how much money am I actually making every single month, like that I'm actually bringing home? And what are the things that I'm spending my money on now? But I mean, you could break it all down into steps, just like you said, just one thing a week, just getting out of your head to do it. So if we're talking about one thing this week, like as this episode is dropping, maybe the only thing you need to do this week is figure out how much money you are bringing in, both from your full-time income and your side hustle income, and how much money is going out and where it's going. And it doesn't have to be in an Excel spreadsheet, but how much are you spending on your house expenses? So your rent, your internet, your light, your water, and just put that in a number that just says house, so that you're not, you know, breaking out anxious when you open Microsoft Excel and see all those cells of numbers and words and things that on this budget that you download that you will never, ever use. I think that once you make it a little bit easier and high level, like general words that everyone uses every day, like sitting down and what you're spending, like you will make it easy to nail down activities every single week.
And let me also offer a legitimate apology. If I am shorter this week, you know, for the people who, by the time you hear this episode, hopefully we're still making a run through the playoffs. But the Cowboys won, so yeah, I'm a little bit short because I was, you know, celebratory mood yesterday. So as we're recording this podcast, I realize I might be a little bit shorter than usual, but I wish everybody 1,000 years of success.
Shouldn't that make you more talkative?
No, we don't want to hear more about any Cowboys success or fame.
Yeah, I definitely
like
don't.
That's not even I don't think that's conducive to any positive movement in 2019.
I think you and I celebrate differently, Rich, because I'm definitely struggling over here. But that being said, you said something there, Stephen, that I really liked, and you know, I'm trying to call out these quotes so people, you know, drive them home. Is, you know, you figure out this week, and then you said you figure out next week when it gets here. And I feel like most people are like, well, I got to figure out all the week. So some people hear that 52, they're like, well, I can't get started because I got to figure out all 52. Figure out this week, and next week will arrive on its own, then figure it out when it gets here. So I really like that tip as well.
And I think that just going back to what people can do, because I feel like maybe at the end of that, I fumbled out or, you know, was rambling a little bit, but just specifically to answer your question on what people could do to get out of their head and get started. One thing they can do is find other people who are trying to get their money together too. Another thing they can do is just write down how much money they're bringing in every single month and how much money is going out, like literally looking at your bank account, how much is going out every single month, and just start with those numbers instead of jumping into Excel and, you know, things going off the rails because you're anxious. I don't know what it is about Microsoft Excel and spreadsheets that, you know, either make people cheer or piss people off. But, you know, in regards to just getting out of your head and doing it, sometimes you need that outside support from like somebody else. And sometimes you do just need a step to say, okay, well, now I have my income and my expenses. I would rather the expenses be lower. Let's see how we can cut some of these things off and slice some of these expenses off.
Got it.
Yeah, I have a quick quote that I found funny. Maybe nobody else is, but it's because I'm a nerd. But it was, there's more lies told in Microsoft Excel than Word. And I was like, yeah, I've seen spreadsheets that tell more fictitious stories than the best graphic novel. And so I think that's why people get intimidated by Excel.
The accuracy, though, my God.
I know. Those formulas, though, they'd be killing me. And I was going to say, I can tell you several negative things about Excel or Google Sheets, but that'll be a completely separate episode.
We're staying positive. We're staying positive at the beginning of the year. We're staying positive.
I know. So we talked a little bit about mindset. We talked even a little bit about figuring out what's going in, what's coming out, and the importance of budgeting or whatever word people want to use to make them feel good about it. So someone says, all right, I have a budget. What's next? What's really the next step in terms of systems? More specifically, if someone's trying to get the right system set up for themselves. So maybe there's not a prescriptive, you need to do X, Y, Z, but what should people be thinking about as they're trying to create systems that'll be sustainable?
I think this is an important question because now that you know how much is coming in, how much is going out, you start to think about, well, is the money going where I want it to go? I know when I was starting to get my financial life together, I realized that I was eating so much of my money, like just every single week, just destroying food. And I'm wondering, dang, where's hundreds of dollars every single month spent, you know, on lunch and dinner? It was crazy. But when you realize the money's not going where I want it to go and I want to maybe save more money, you know, maybe you're still living paycheck to paycheck. Like I know when I was trying to get my life together, every single paycheck had to be waited on. Like I was looking at 11:59, seeing when the clock was going to hit 12 so I can start transferring money out to different places. But when you start deciding what you need to do with your money, so you know, some people make a goal to save 10%, or it's important to start kicking money to the side to destroy some debt, or you are big on traveling, so you want to start saving money to travel. Well, it's incredibly hard to save for all of those things in one account. So one thing that I did when I started getting more financially organized is I started making separate accounts for their different responsibilities, especially because like I had AT&T U-verse at the time, and these fools took out 2 months of my bill out of my checking account. And when I called them and said, hey, can you return that? They were like, oh, we'll just not bill you next month. And it was impossible to explain to this fool that I needed the money to pay another bill. But from there, I was like, okay, well, there's just going to be an account with bill money in there, because he wouldn't have been able to take out 2 months of billing if I just sent that $46 over to the side. So like the first account that I have is like my checking account, where most of my money comes in. The next account that I have is a bill account. It's another checking account. But any bills that are like are overdraft or auto drafted, not overdrafted, that are auto drafted out of your account, you want to connect to an account that's away from where your money's coming in. And outside of that, then it's just depending on your financial goals. So, you know, I want to travel some more. Or we were talking earlier, like I want to get my life membership this year. So I have a checking account that's specifically for me transferring money to that account so I can, you know, invest in my life membership at the end of the year.
For the fraternity, because some people are going to have no idea, like life membership, like you mean to stay alive?
Yeah, no. So we're in a fraternity. We're in the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. And so I know that I want to, you know, kick the two G's or the couple, yep, you know, the money on top of that for the life membership. And so I have an account for that, and I'm saving every single month towards that. So when you're getting financially organized, it's best to have a place where you can put the money for the different responsibilities that the money has. And your money should never be unemployed. Like it needs a job whenever it's coming into your account. So you want to make sure you separate the money and the accounts on what they're supposed to be doing.
I love that, man. I love that. And it's been a great conversation in terms of having you on the podcast, the insights and even the story. And actually, I thought that you were full time into No Money and not still working, which is all the more impressive. So where can the people find you? Where can people learn a little bit more about No Money? And if somebody wants you to come to their school, you know, what's the process for that?
About No Money, you can find us on all social media platforms. We're No Money Inc. That's KNOWMONEYINC. I know probably throughout the interview, people are like, he started a company called No Money. That ain't going to make me want to learn. So it's KNOW, just to clear that up. But so we're No Money Inc. on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can find us online at nomoney.org. So that's KNOWMONEY.org. I'm No Money Steve across all social media platforms. I'm most active on Instagram and Facebook. So that's KNOWMONEYSTEVE. And if you are looking for a keynote speaker that's talking about either money or overcoming obstacles, you can go to my website. It's StephenMHughes.com. Stephen, M as in mother, Hughes.com. Or you can just hit me up on Instagram, because I'm going to contact you either way.
Awesome, man. So yeah, it's been great having you on the podcast, and best of luck with 2019, bro.
Appreciate it, bro. Y'all take it easy.
I think, as you normally say, good brother, another fun one or another good one. There's something you always say every time that we have a guest, and I can't remember if it's another good one, another fun one. I mean, though it was both.
Of course, because you're asking me what it is, I cannot recall what it is, but I do trust that I say it all the time, and I would be able to remember it any time except for the fact that you're asking me about it right now.
Yeah, it'd be like that sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the takeaways would be, you know, if it's working for you and your money's working and you're getting it right, then keep on doing what you're doing. But if not, take a moment, a step back, stop what you're doing. Because I'm about to ruin the image and the style that you used to. I look funny. But yo, I'm making money, see? And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. And today's review of the week comes from Never T, and it reads 5 stars. I'm a 30-something. Shh.
be quiet.
But this podcast has the best financial tips and it's to the point, exclamation point, used correctly. You guys are easy to listen to and the sultry voices makes the great tips sound even better. Love it. I think anyone trying to build a better financial future should listen. High five, three thumbs up. I appreciate that, Nevity.
Yeah, definitely appreciate those five stars. And I was wondering how you were going to describe the first emojis that are high fives. I thought it was praise hands or claps or I don't know. I've heard people call it a few different things.
I'm actually always confused by those, but I did learn recently that Siri will read emojis to you. So maybe I should like text myself these emojis and see what Siri would describe them because that's probably the most accurate description.
I did not know that. I might have to try it out myself.
Yeah, I found that out the hard way. I was texting somebody and they're like, Siri is reading all these emojis you're sending. I'm like, word, is she accurate? And they were like, yeah. So I don't know how it works, but I need to look into that. About that life. And if you find us and would like to find out more, follow us on social at Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. You may follow our individual accounts at The Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter, two T's everywhere else on earth. Rich is available at I am Rich Jones.
I am.
And as we mentioned up top, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email, where you receive our weekly newsletter covering actual work and money tips and much more.
And also, don't forget to visit paybal.co/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, to get access to the after show. So again, thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.